thanks so much for tuning in. It is Super Hungry, the podcast, conversations with not-so-starving artists. My name is Virginia Anson Gruber. I'm your host, the creator, the game maker, if you will. I had a good week. It's been a good week. I think that it has been an interesting week. Work is good. I'm in a very weird place creatively. I'm feeling such a pull to be doing just completely, like, transparently creative things, and it's a new thing for me, so it feels like something I should have explored maybe at like 10, and now I'm doing it at 26, so that's kind of odd, but I'm excited about it, so that's good. Went to Disneyland yesterday. What a fucking nightmare that was. Oh god, like, we have annual passes and I'm normally super excited to go. And I was excited yesterday for a while, but it was like literally every shitty theme park thing that could happen to a person, like, happened to us, like, back to back to back to back. And that was a little intense. Like, after a while, it's 100 degrees out in Anaheim and you're standing in the line for It's a Small World, and you've been in that line for almost 45 minutes because the people that are running that ride can't figure out to tell the lady that's in the wheelchair to bend her knees to fit on the boat all the way. Like, painful. Fucking painful. You don't enjoy It's a Small World after that. You want to jump into the water because you're hyperventilating from heat, but you don't really enjoy all the cute little redo additions that they've done to It's a Small World, because now it's weird. It's got, like, The Little Mermaid and, like, Finding Nemo and Dory and stuff. It's very bizarre. But anyway, we get off the It's a Small World ride, which, by the way, was the first thing that we did. So we've spent an hour basically doing that. And then we walk over and we're like, oh, we'll do Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, because we have not done that in many a age. Like, it's been many a year. So let's do that. It'll be great. We go, we're standing in line for maybe a half an hour behind one of those super obnoxious families that just does every annoying thing possible while standing in line. You know, they're fucking touching things and opening cabinets that say, like, cast member only, and, like, pulling on badges. It's like the mom was doing it too, and it's like, first of all, rally your shitty kids. Second of all, oh, I understand where that's coming from, because you're kind of a shitty person. It was awful. Then, after 35 minutes in line, they fucking tell us the ride breaks down. So, I'm upset. I need some food, obviously. We get some food. Then we decide, try another line. Haunted Mansion. Classic, right? It's super great. They brought the Hatbox goes back. Super excited about this. It's like a 30-minute ride according to the app that we have. Fucking not a 30-minute line. It was about an hour into this line when we find out, oh, that broke down too. So in case you're keeping track, it was an hour in the line slash ride for It's a Small World. 30 to 35 minutes in the line for Big Thunder Mountain for it to break down, and then an hour in Haunted Mansion line for it to break down. So of course I had to get a churro, because I'm just a stress eater. We're walking around, we're finally like, all right, let's just, we'll fucking get some fast passes for Splash Mountain, it'll be great. We'll go over to California Adventure and we'll ride a ride and it'll be awesome. We'll go over to the boardwalk. So we go over because my coworker Billy had said that there's a ride over near the pier, Paradise Pier, called the Zephyr, and that the pre-recorded voice on that apparently sounds like me. But not just me, like a 1940s version of me. You know, somebody that's like, now see here, kids. And what Billy didn't know until I told him is that I actually do sort of a weird impression of Jennifer Jason Leigh in the Hudsucker Proxy, where she's like, listen to me, Hudsucker. And he was like, yes, that's the voice. So because I am wont to throw up on most rides that are of any sort of centrifugal force value, I went with Steven and we hovered below the ride to listen to the pre-recorded tape. That I could understand why he said sounded like me, but mostly it was just nice to know that somebody heard something and thought that it sounded like me, even if it didn't really sound like me. So that was fun. Then we went on this, like, cool river rafting ride that was, like, with a bunch of people. And that was nice because we got really wet and it was kind of hot. And then we just sort of walked around a little bit more and enjoyed the rest of the day. Everything after that sort of was nice, you know, and pleasant. And Steven, thankfully, is just such, like, a wonderfully even human being that I was able to just, like, rage. And he was like, but we're at Disney. It's great. So that was good. But I don't know, man. Have you guys ever had shitty theme park experiences? Because I definitely did, and I was like glad that we had an annual pass, because if that was just a normal, regular price day, I would have hated it. I would have felt so obligated to have a great time when I mostly just had a mediocre time. So that was my Saturday. This episode of Super Hungry the Podcast is brought to you by Hair by Kaylee Vandenberg. Based in Los Angeles, but available to travel anywhere, Kaylee does expert cuts, color, styling, and babification for women, men, and children. And don't just take my word for it, she actually does cut mine and Steven's hair. From concept to execution, this talented lady can do it all. And brides, are you looking for the perfect updo for your big day? Kaylee's got you covered. Her services include consultation, trials, and flawless day of execution. And she also does styling tutorials. If you've ever seen those on-point hairstyles on Instagram and Tumblr, yeah, she teaches you how to do them. She's got over 1.5 million views on YouTube and has been featured on Glamour.com, Style Me Pretty, and Lucky Magazine. So check out her portfolio at KayleeVandenberg.com and book her to style you today. Shout out to our brother podcast, Old Geek Young Geek, actually run by my future brother-in-law, Scott Pell. He discusses geek culture, video games, and fandom with his buddy and G4 alum, Steven Johnson. Check him out on iTunes and Podomatic. They're on Facebook as well. Old Geek Young Geek. Yeah. Big thanks to two people who are now officially a part of the Super Hungry team. Our good pal Sydney Landis is designing a brand new logo for Super Hungry the Podcast. She's an amazing painter, sculptor, artist, sketch artist, and you can find her portfolio at ilusydneyt.tumblr.com. So that's ilusydneyt.tumblr.com. Another big thanks to my buddy Chris Henry, who is coming on as the new sound engineer for Super Hungry the Podcast. And he is actually a producer of Crew Call Podcast that is put on by the Anonymous Production Assistance blog. So if you are a fan of below the line stories from Hollywood, check out Crew Call, which I believe is on a bit of a hiatus, but is coming back for a new season soon. So big shout outs to Chris and Sydney. Thank you guys so much for lending your talents to the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. I'm excited. We're about to listen to a cool interview that I did with my friend Fairfax Banks, who's a super rad lady. She's an art director, an artist, a fucking babe, like all around cool, badass chick. She's also from Michigan. I am not from Michigan, but if you're keeping track, I lived in Michigan for a while. So, yeah, let's listen to this pretty dope conversation with Fairfax Banks. Boom. Well, thank you for coming. I'm always a little awkward at the beginning, and then I edit it out.
Well, that's always like being at the beginning of like first date.
Well, it's a weird thing that I ask people to do, right? I'm saying,
come talk about yourself.
Come to Sherman Oaks. You're going to talk about yourself for like an hour. But more than that, I'm going to put you in a walk-in closet 6 inches away from me.
Your face is... We could make out right now.
We could make out right now.
You get a lot of...
A lot of slurps.
A lot of slurps.
We're that close.
You're going to feel me sweat, too.
If this was an old prison movie, a piece of glass would be separating us, and we would both be leaning up against the window with our hands. That's how close we are.
Or alternately, just boobs. Boobs on boobs.
Boobs, boobs, and then like a message on a hand. I always see that. It's like, oh, I love you.
And then they put it boobs.
On or just boobs written on a hand.
Oh, yeah, just boobs.
Anything boobs. Prison is just boobs. But thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Fairfax. Well, see, now I have these pre-recorded intros, so before I always felt like I had to like give like a weird grandiose intro with the person here. Now I just do it beforehand, so you'll hear a bunch of stuff before.
Yep.
And you'll be like, yeah, that's me. And then now we're talking. It's pretty good.
And it's not like, hey, let me give you my elevator speech about myself, because that shit's boring.
Yeah, I don't really need that.
Again, like, first dates. First dates are awkward as fuck. Even if it's a great first date.
Always awkward.
It's like, hey, how's your life? Like, I know nothing about you.
How has life treated you up until this moment while you're sitting across from me having pasta?
27? Great. How have the past 27 years been? Like, update me.
Catch me up.
Catch me up on what you're doing in life.
One of the things I do love, though, being next to people on a first date.
Oh, yeah. Or, and, like, trying to figure out, like, is this their first date?
Oh, yeah. And yeah. If it's a bad one, I don't know. I just really, like, Steven and I were over at the Italian restaurant just up the street in Los Feliz. And it's literally, like, 3 2-by-2. It's, like, two-person tables back to back. So close. So we're basically having this first date with this couple for how close they are to us.
Was it a good first date?
No, it was not. He was, like, going on and on and on. She going on and on and on. But it was, like, they weren't really listening to each other.
They were just talking at each other.
And they both sounded horrible. Like, neither one of them would have been people that I would have hung out with. And so just being in that was, like,
hello, we live in L.A.
I know, but I'm hoping that, I mean, that's probably everything. At least they found each other in boredom. I don't know. I was bored watching it, so I'm assuming that they were bored being in it.
Yeah.
But then I see a lot of people not bored with their own shitty lives.
It's an interesting thing about going on dates now, like, and not ever going on dates and just, like, going out and, like, being like, oh, hey, meet me at this bar. Let's drink. Oh, you're going to go back to my place and bang it out, like,
yeah,
great, like,
totally
no conversation, really.
No,
it's all the conversation is leading up to, like, what you're anticipating, which is foreplay.
Maybe you'll get a couple texts before and or after.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
I mean, I don't know, I think I was probably more like that before. I don't know, I've been like that and then I've not been like that. I think it depends on the person, because I think it's very easy to fall into that because it's so acceptable.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like,
I think it's easy to be passive about it and just let it go if it's not something that you're truly interested in pursuing.
Yeah, because you can just be like, fucking done.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know that, like, they're on standby, and if they're interested, you'll see the three little dots pop up, like, on your iPhone. And,
there,
like,
you go.
I know you're, okay, let's meet there. We're good to go.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, going on dates, it's like, I don't know. I think I've always noticed other people going on dates.
Yeah.
And I've always been the person to, like, listen to it. Like, what are they talking about? Like, what,
yeah, I like live them? I like live play it in my head. I'm very in it with
what
them.
Do they do? Maybe what do they do? Like, let's listen to, like, what they're saying about, like, jobs or, like, I don't know, their cat. Or
so,
like,
are you, like, comparing yourself to their first date in a way?
Well, no, now I, like, wonder, like, I became very self-conscious about it, like, not in a bad way, but just like, oh, like, I'm partaking in a lot of PDA, and I've never really done that before.
Yeah, because you are sort of, you're seeing somebody now. We're gonna leave it shrouded in mystery, but, like, you're in a different situation now. You have sort of moved into another level where you're not necessarily just, like, fucking go. You're enjoying the person you're hanging out
with. And the thing
was
that it was never from the basis. Like, it was, I'm interested in you.
Yeah.
I want to date you.
And it just happens to be convenient that, like, you guys actually still enjoy each other. It's surprising, though. It's always surprising when it happens.
Oh, it's so surprising. After not the last time I dated was 4 years ago.
Well, I'm excited for you. I want to leave it continue. I want to shroud it a little bit.
Yeah.
Also, because that I want people to think that they maybe still have a chance with you, you know, because you're a total babe.
Hot town. Commodity.
Hey, I mean, I don't know if you've seen her in these glasses, you guys.
Yeah, also, I mean, like, you into, like, hot, smelly girls in a... tiny walk-in closet. It's me.
It's me.
Hi, it's me. I'm hot and sweaty. It's like a hot and ready. Hot and ready.
Hot and sweaty.
Hot and sweaty.
Yeah, that's most girls, I think, that are, like, feminist anyway. Because, like, you accidentally become feminist.
Oh, yeah.
I've found myself accidentally becoming feminist lately. And it's not, like I am a feminist. Let me clarify. Like, I am. But because it's so socially acceptable to be a feminist now, I just forget to shave my legs for, like, a fucking, like, long time. Fortnights.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple fortnights I will not shave. To where I have what looks like to be intentionally feminist legs. I'm just lazy.
Yeah. Oh, I lost my razor again.
Yeah.
Don't know where it went. No, it's, I've had the same thing with makeup. One of my roommates is on the kick that she's not even on a kick. It's just, like, she doesn't need a lot of makeup, so she doesn't wear a lot of makeup.
Yeah, same.
And it's something that, like, I've noticed that, like, I've been like, oh, you know what? There's so much better stuff I could be doing right now.
I feel like there are more things that I could do with the time that it would take to primp. But I also think it comes with getting to a point where you're comfortable enough with yourself. Because you have to be, and then, by the way, this is not saying that people who like to wear makeup or experiment with makeup are in any way insecure at all. I do not mean that, because I think that there is a huge confidence that comes with being able to pull all of that off.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not in any way saying that. I'm just saying that
I think, like, probably your roommate and, like, you have, and, like, sometimes I have, you know, where I'm at now. I think being comfortable to be natural just comes from a place of being like, this is how I am. I'm just going to go out and be that today. And yeah, that's fine. It's a different type of confidence.
I love the act of putting on makeup. I love getting
ready.
Oh my God,
it's so much fun. And like, it's just,
it
does
take a long time. There are just times that
it's easier.
I want to run out of the house. And yeah, and I think it's something, it's not having somebody that I feel like I have to impress.
No.
Like,
yeah, that's a good part. Yeah. It's feeling like you can just be you with the person that you hang out with a lot.
Yeah.
Which I think is, again, it's just, it's finding people that you are okay with having relationships with. The older I get, it's always that. It's like the more I realize that life is just relationships. Like, your really close friendships are probably going to be similar to the way that your romantic relationships are in terms of intimacy.
Yeah.
You sleep with one of them. You're building a life with one of them. You're a partner of one of them. But your really, really close friends, like the people that you kind of really bring into your circle or take counsel from or,
know you,
those people, those are intimate relationships. And I've found, and it's something that I keep talking about, I think, or maybe I've talked about a lot. I don't know. I'm the kind of person that takes friend rejections fucking so hard.
Yeah, it's devastating.
Like, the worst. Like, I can bounce back from a breakup, obviously, if I'm engaged now, so it's different, but, like, in my past, I've been able to just be, like, on to the next one. You know, just very... Friend breakups,
I don't even remember the last friend breakup that I had. That was, like, devastating.
I just...
That's a good thing.
Even like, just, like, a rejection. I think there's a friend breakup, and then there's also just being rejected by someone, too, as a friend. And both are interesting, because it feels like it's more personal almost than a romantic rejection, because if you're fucking someone and they just don't want to fuck you anymore, they break up with you. And you're like, oh, okay, cool.
I understand it's just
not working out.
Yeah.
If you're friends with someone and then they just don't want to be friends with you anymore, you're like, what did I do? What happened as a person in me that changed this?
Overnight. That, and like, all of a sudden it's just, like,
you go,
I love being around you and I, like, want to pursue, like, spending time with you. And like, then
for it to change, just like, it always surprises me.
Yeah.
It always surprises me. And it always, I take it fucking
hard.
Super hard.
Yeah.
Like, super hard. And now it just is to this point where I think that as a person, it takes me a lot longer to make friends.
We're at the point where, like, we're shedding that, like, layer of, like, I need to be friends with every single human being I meet. And it's the point, like, no, like, I actually want to cultivate things.
And just have relationships.
And have people. Relationships.
Not the check-in people, basically.
Yeah. So acquaintances and those relationships serve a certain purpose.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just at the point in time where, like, you don't want that to be the majority of, like,
no, you what's want going it to be anymore. You want it to be the satellite, I think.
Yeah, it's
not
an
the
orbit.
It needs to be the satellite, not
it's
the
an orbit. Yeah. Like, you know it's there. You know that you can, like, check in and be like, yo, sup.
I think that it just comes with age.
Yeah.
So, but you moved from Grand Rapids, Michigan, which I've had a couple people on the pod, or like, I will have a couple people on the podcast that have been from Michigan because I spent a lot of time there. But we didn't meet there.
No.
Either. We met when you moved here.
Through people from Michigan.
Through people from Michigan. And I think that, because I've moved from Florida to California. Well, I lived in Boston for a summer as well, but I've moved from Florida to California to Michigan to back to California. So I've lived kind of multiple places. You similarly have lived multiple places because you're from Louisiana and then you moved to Michigan and now you're here. I think every time a move like that happens, at least from my experience, and I want to ask what yours is, it's not necessarily a reset button, but it's a new version of yourself. It's a new
episode that you kind of are able to
sort of
obviously, like, being younger and making massive moves, like, you're still very much in, like, your own ways, but it's interesting. Like, it's a pretty extroverted kid, moved to Michigan when I was 14 and all of a sudden, like, painfully shy.
Where were you born in Louisiana?
Slidell, which is right across Lake Pontchartrain from New Orleans.
Okay. Did you spend a lot of time in New Orleans as a kid?
I spent a lot of time in, like, Metro New Orleans. And family in Metro New Orleans, and then...
And you lived there until...
I lived in southern Louisiana until I was 14. I lived on, like, pretty New Orleans proper area.
How did that influence you as a kid? Like, just the culture of the city and...
It doesn't.
No?
No, I mean, like, you're cognizant of there being culture. Like, you know, it's like having a... It's growing up anywhere. It's like asking, how was it growing up in L.A. if you've grown up in L.A.?
Right. You don't recognize it you for the oddity it.
Yeah,
that it is.
I never recognized it. I mean, I knew there were interesting things going on. I knew there was a history to it. I knew there was a rich history.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever go to concerts or music or shows when you were a kid? Did your parents ever bring you to
that? Yeah. My mom always had me, like, immersed in doing something cultural.
Are your parents still together?
No. My parents got divorced when I was 11. And part of that was my mom went back to school to get her master's when I was, like, in third grade.
Okay.
And so...
What did she get her master's in?
She got it in rhetoric, specifically focusing in rhetoric of motherhood and early 19th century feminism. So, shouts out to all the feminist moms out there.
Including yours.
Including mine.
What was that like, kind of growing up with a mom that...
We'll touch back on that.
You're like, I don't know how much time we have.
Yeah, she's written novels about it. I could write a novel about it. No, but I grew up on, like, the southeastern side of the state. And then when she got her master's, we moved about 2 hours away to the west side of the state so she could get her PhD. And actually, where True Detective season one is supposed to be set.
That's where you lived?
Yeah. Well, around that area, Lafayette, Louisiana.
That's so cool. Yeah. I love that fucking area, man. Oh, I'm so into it. Like, I'm super into Florida now.
Yeah.
That I don't live there.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you live there anymore, you're like...
I hated it as a kid.
I'm basically the Florida Tourism Board now. It's me and Pitbull. That's it.
No, it's me and Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt.
Aww.
Since they're big proponents.
They've been building a lot of houses down there.
They have. Shouts out.
Because they are listening to this podcast.
Yo, what up?
Yo, what up, Angie?
But yeah, I think it was a culture shock moving from Louisiana to Michigan. And then
because of how religious it is there?
It's religious in both places.
Really? Yeah, oh. Louisiana too? I guess it would
Catholicism.
Be. Oh yeah. So much. That's true.
So
that's
Catholic true. That like we don't even call our counties, they're parishes.
Right. That's so true.
So, yeah, no, I think more so that, like, it's just Southern and Midwestern, Northern culture are very different. I can't even really explain to you why.
Well, I mean, okay, so there's religious in the South. Is it conservative?
Oh,
religious?
It's so conservative.
Okay.
That, I mean, like, it's an extension of a Bible.
It's kind of conservative religious in the Midwest, too.
Yeah, I mean, those are pretty much in line with each other. No, it's just, I don't know. It's something that I honestly can't intelligently describe.
This podcast is not intelligent, so don't worry about that.
I gotta go.
What was the feeling?
No intelligence. I gotta go.
What was the feeling that was different? Like, when you...
I think more so the feeling is that you're 14 and you've had a group of friends for, like, the last 5 years, and you've already had to move a lot in your relatively short lifespan, and you're going hormonal changes.
Yeah.
And figuring out boys and all of that stuff, and all of a sudden you're transplanted into a completely different place. All of a sudden you're figuring out, oh, look, this is fucking snow on the ground. Like,
yeah. Snow is crazy.
Snow sucks.
Like, I talked about it for a long time with Kaylee, probably longer than I should have, because I listened back to it and I was like, we were just talking about weather for a really long time. It dominates your life in Michigan. It is everything in Michigan.
It because, dictates like, you can't, everything.
You can't do things. You can't do things. And so, to go from Louisiana, I bet, which is just warm, occasionally it'll get rainy and a little cold.
Oh, no, it's pretty rainy there. It storms there. It's humid.
Because it's on the Gulf right there?
Oh, yeah. It's so humid.
It's super humid. We would only have half an hour storms in Florida. So
we'd have all day long storms.
Oh, gross. Yeah. Would it get really, really cold?
No. Yeah, like, the coldest it would get would be, like, 40 degrees. As opposed to, like, negative 10 degrees.
That's not bad. Yeah. Negative 10. It's just anything negative. You get, yeah. I understand why not they call it that. I'm just like, I'm not a fan. And, no. So, you moved at 14. You're going to a new school. Your mom is finishing her master's.
So, basically, it comes down to that, like, I was an extroverted kid and all of a sudden could not talk to anybody for the life of me.
Oh, wow.
And ended up finding some girls that, like, took me under their wing. But, like, it's interesting, like, from 14 to, like, 16, almost 17, like, I was just quiet. Really? I was very quiet. I felt like an ugly duckling all the time. I was weird, quote-unquote. I'm doing the quotation air symbols right now. Weird.
It's like a thrilling radio hour. You're giving people the descriptions of what we're doing. Next up
on Thrilling Radio Hour.
But yeah, so you were quiet. You were a quiet
I was
person.
Quiet. And, yeah, like, I just, it was a hard few years. Like, moving across the country, any kid who's moved across the country or had to move a lot, like, will understand, like, what that feeling is. It's a lot of isolation.
Did you get closer to your parents or farther away from them because of it?
Oh, it really strained the relationship with me and my mom. Because my dad was still in Louisiana.
Are you closer with him, you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I'm equally close with both of them.
Just at the time?
Two very different relationships. Yeah, but I mean, like, at the time, like, I was a teenager. I was angry that I had to move across the country. Like, I was angry that I was, like, isolated from, like, my family. Like, I was angry that there's 6 inches of snow outside and, like, I can't feel my fingers. Like, I was just angry and I was lonely and, like, my mom was angry and lonely, too. And I think just, like, having that in an apartment, like, it strained the relationship horribly. And then it continued to get worse because I went to France for a month when I was 16.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, it was the first time I ever drank, smoked weed. Like,
big deal.
Learned how to party from a bunch of French teenagers.
Excellent.
But I came out of my shell, and then all of a sudden, I came back, and, like, I started making more and more friends. I started, like, kind of embracing my personality.
Yeah.
Started going to shows. Actively going to shows a lot.
It's good, because then there's such a community around that immediately you can kind of get involved in. Did it happen pretty fast for you when you started?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Like, all of a sudden, like, I came back and had more friends in, like, 2 month time span that I had never had before.
Oh, good.
And,
how old are you now when you're starting to come out of your show?
I'm 16, about to be 17. And, I don't know. It just started getting into, like, dyeing my hair color. Like, secretly getting piercings.
Expressing yourself more.
Expressing myself. Finding out what I was interested in.
Yeah. Which was?
So, I mean, I originally thought I was going to go to school for journalism. I've got journalism in, like, my blood. My dad's through and through journalist. News anchor,
what did he do?
Reporter.
Oh, really?
News anchor, reporter.
For where?
Editor. ABC, CBS, like, all of the big, like, New Orleans, like,
oh, I didn't know
news
that.
Stations.
That's awesome. Was he on air?
Yeah, he's an anchor, reporter.
He still does it?
No, not anymore. Oh, okay. He's retired now, but...
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
That's how he and my mom met, because my mom was a videographer at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, and they like to party and get drunk with each other.
I mean, don't we all like to party?
I hope they aren't listening to this.
They like to party. We like to party.
Yeah.
You'll be like, thanks for passing it on, Mom.
They taught me how to party.
Thanks for that and for the fucking ring that you're wearing, because I can't get over that thing. It's so...
Well,
it's,
we can talk about that
later.
We'll
take a picture of it. I'll put it on when I make the post.
It's my fat bling ring.
It's so cute.
So
you've moved, you're with your mom, you've got this anger, you're lonely, you kind of want to be hanging out with your dad. Did you see him a lot?
No, not at all. I would go home. I didn't go home that often. I did the first few years and then kind of teetered out.
Was it just easier emotionally to not have to deal with it?
No, because then I started doing the thing where you start forming your own family. You've been separated from your family. You feel alienated because I also felt like the black sheep of the family.
Why?
Oh, because it was the weird one. Everyone in my family was, like, conservative and a banker and born and bred to,
and
like...
And you just were gonna do something not, like...
Yeah, so, like, knew. I was initially, like, into journalism. I was, like, the editor-in-chief of, like, my newspaper, my last 2 years of school. Yeah. Wow. So I did that, and I was really into art. It took me a while to figure it out that, like, I should go to art school. But, yeah. I mean, I started...
What was the first inclination that you should go to art school?
It was actually interesting. Like, later down the line, like, my friend Eric, we were talking one day, and I was like, I have no idea what I want to do. Like, I think I'm going to drop out of school for a semester, because at that point in time, it was just, like...
I felt like you were spinning your wheels.
Well, when I was at U of M Flint, like, it's basically a community college. Right. That just has U of M attached to it.
Right.
Didn't know what I wanted to do, and we were talking... at the time, he was an art director. He's a creative director now in San Francisco. He was just, like, saying something along the lines of, like, you have an eye for design. Like, I can see it. And it all stems back to, like, just, like, rudimentary coding for, like, MySpace layouts. Like,
okay, that's where you got started.
Curating your MySpace. Like, right. Stuff like that. And he was just like, I think you have an eye for this. Like, if you're interested, you should pursue this. Like, I'm going to kind of, like, push you to do this.
That's
and
cool.
He is one of the people who pushed me to, like, apply for art schools.
And so where did you end up going?
I ended up at Kendall College of Art and Design in Grand Rapids. I got into CCS in Detroit as well. And I just wanted to... At the time, I had been living on the east side of the state, and I kind of wanted to just experience the west side of the state.
That's cool. Did you know anyone in Grand Rapids when you moved?
Yeah, like, friends of friends. Like, no one I was super close with. I ended up just, like, pretty much my close... knit group of friends, like, grew out of, like, being there.
That's good.
And partying. And just partying my ass off.
Spent a lot of time with the Bob?
No. Very minimal.
Where did you party in Grand Rapids?
Oh, the Meanwhile. I was the queen of the Meanwhile.
The queen of
the Queen of the Meanwhile.
Meanwhile.
For anybody who's listening, who's from Michigan, they'll laugh and know it's me. The
it's
queen.
Me.
It's
That's
me.
True.
Hello, it's me, the queen.
Hello, subjects. Your queen is speaking. So you moved to Grand Rapids, you're at Kendall. Did you graduate from there? You studied graphic design, yeah?
I studied graphic design. It's actually funny. Two of my best friends from school, from my program, were over at my house last night. They live in Long Beach now.
Oh, hooray.
Wait,
is that Kaylee and...
No, it's Alex and Steve.
Okay. It's just a bunch of people that nobody knows. Well, some people probably know these people.
But it was funny because we were... reminiscing about, like, school, and, like, my best friend, Ambria, who I live with, was my roommate at the time, my last semester of school.
And she has done some stuff with you on some of your projects, because I was researching you a little bit earlier.
Ooh.
Taking it seriously.
Going back in the archive.
I know, I was looking, so your website, fairfaxbuchananbanks.com, for those who are listening, I'm going to link it just so people can see your portfolio. You've done a lot of really cool shit, like, and most of it is you're either designing or art directing or sort of the lead creative director on it. So you've done a couple campaigns, I was really drawn by this sort of self-expression sketch series that you did with, like, pencils.
Yeah.
That was really great. Like, I don't know, you've just done a lot of really interesting stuff. You partnered with Eskimo on something, but Ambria took a lot of the photographs.
Ambria was in a lot of the photographs.
Yeah.
Ambria, myself, Kaylee, which
I just had
back
on the podcast. Old roommate, you guys used to live together.
Our friend May and our friend Bethany went on a really big road trip for, like, 2 weeks, and it's
That's Pizza America, right?
Pizza America.
So...
Not to be confused with a pizza blog, it's just literally about a piece of America.
And so what was the premise of this project?
The premise of the project is that Ambria she got the lineup for FYF Fest.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, my Bloody Valentine is playing. Do you want to go? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, great. I just bought us 2 tickets. We need to figure out how we're going to get to LA. And I was like, oh, tight. Let's do a road trip. And then all of a sudden, like, our friend May and Bethany were like, cool, we're down.
That's amazing.
Bloody Valentine, but want to go. And then all of a sudden, like,
infinitely cheaper, way
easier
to do.
Then all of a sudden, like, one of the other girls who was on it originally bailed out, and Kayla was like, I have nothing on my agenda. I'll go.
That's awesome.
And so we did that. And
was it a sponsored thing? Was it like a project?
It was. Oh. I mean, it wasn't like anything that was like super serious. It was all, I mean, all of it literally got put together a month beforehand. When all of a sudden I was just like, I think I want to do like a lifetime blog of like a road trip.
Yeah. So how can people find it if they want to see it?
There's a hashtag on Instagram.
Pizza America, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pizza America.
Just one A.
One A.
One A.
Connecting pizza it. America. One word. Way in the archives.
I know, but I loved it because I didn't know. I was like, a lot of what I'm enjoying about this is that I'm like weirdly researching my friends.
Oh, yeah.
Which feels stalkery. But it gives me a reason, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like,
and then you get to have conversations that you've never like.
That I've never.
Really, I would never bring it up.
Exactly.
It's not something I'm ashamed of. It's just something that like it happened. It served its purpose.
And you just don't walk around with pizza a bunch on your face, like.
Or, yeah.
You know. Yeah.
And it inspired, I think, a lot of like It inspired a lot of lifestyle blogs that I think like their formatting of doing things.
Kind of changed a little.
It changed, and I think like there are some really like good blogs by photographers that we know that I think has something to do with the way we handled it. So
that's
like,
awesome. Did you guys have a lot of followers on it?
I mean, it was I think for what it was, and like five girls who like weren't celebrities, like
yeah,
we knew the right people to put it out there in the world and the right people to get an audience, and like we had like 30,000 hits in like the first week. Like
that's great.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, there were people watching and reacting and interacting with it. Like
that's cool.
It was a creative outlet that like I definitely needed at the time because I wasn't happy with my job.
Which was what?
I was working for a really tiny ad branding agency.
How old were you at the time?
I think it was 20. I was 24.
Okay. And when did you move out to LA? How old were you?
I was 25. So all of this, I basically like moved out within like a 10-month time span after this trip, because I kind of decided like I think I want to live in LA. Like I think LA is a place like I can grow. And like at the same time, like Ambria was like, I want to go there too. Like I fell in love with it. And interestingly enough, after this trip, four of the girls have ended up in California, one in Oakland, three in LA, and one of the girls just got back from literally a year of international travel.
That's awesome.
Like being in New Zealand, being in Europe, like,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like she just had the most wild adventure that like
my friends Phil and Lorelei, you know them, right? Phil and Lorelei.
I don't think so.
They're from Grand Rapids, and they Phil, Carol, and Lorelei Grace, they're both artists and filmmakers, and they just spent like a year and a half just, and they were like live work study kind of stuff, like woofing, but not really.
No, so and that's like what Bethany, that,
yeah.
Shout out to Bethany Rabbit.
All these people, we just love our fucking friends.
I'm oh, like, yeah, I fucking love my friends.
That's why I like this podcast, because I genuinely just, I love all my friends.
Lovemyfriends.tumblr.com.
Yeah, I just do. Hashtag love my friends. I do. I feel like everyone is so interesting and unique and doing their own thing. I don't know. That's why I'm excited that you're here, because so you were working in Michigan. This is all timeline stuff that I didn't know all the way. So you're working in Michigan. You're doing some of these projects. You're working with some of the local companies. You're working at a small agency. You're not kind of feeling it, so you decide to move out to LA.
Like, literally, no. What happened is, like, I had in my head, like, I'm going to work on my portfolio, and I'm going to, like, get that set and start looking for jobs. And, basically, at the end of, the beginning of April, a year and a half ago,
yeah,
I came back from, like, a long weekend, and all of a sudden my boss was like, I got to let you go, 4 days notice, never got my last paycheck. I didn't know what I was going to do because I didn't want to stay in Michigan, but like I knew that it was going to take longer to probably like find a job.
Right.
So I was just like, maybe I should just go for it. Or I don't know. Like maybe I should do this right now, or maybe like start serving in the meantime.
Yeah.
And then one day Kaylee and I went out to go get sushi because I was feeling really down on the dumps.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she's like, hey, I have kind of a crazy idea. She's looking on her phone and was like, what's up? And she's like, she's found a sublease in Silver Lake that like starts in the middle of May. She's like, do you just want to move to LA? I was like, yeah, let's fucking do it.
That's dope.
And then we moved to LA.
That's ballsy as fuck, dude.
Yeah, what? It was scary.
Yeah,
it was the scariest thing I've ever done before.
Had you hadn't seen the place or anything before you got it?
No, and it was a mess. Like it ended up being awful, and we had to find a new apartment while we were when I was out here.
Yeah.
Before Kaylee got here.
We're at for like a year.
Yeah. And now it's funny because like we ended up finding a great spot and one of my friends who just moved from Detroit moved into our old place.
Yeah. I found that out at the show the other night. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. So it's like, it's interesting how like relationships have been formed.
That's cool.
That like have a history that never like intersected.
Yeah.
It's just, I think I keep going back to it when we're talking about, like, building relationships with, like, your friends and, like, maintaining those, and, like, your family members and, like, the important relationships that are going to be there.
Yeah.
It's just kind of building this net. It is a giant tessellated net.
That can catch you.
That is connected in so many ways that you sometimes you're not even aware of how they're connected. But it's, yeah, there to catch you, like, whatever you need to lean on at that point in time.
Yeah.
To go back, like, backtrack to, like, mom relationship stuff.
Oh, my favorite.
Yeah, my favorite. No, like, we had a really difficult time. Actually, like, for 6 months before I moved, like, we hadn't talked.
Were you living together and you hadn't talked?
No, I mean, I moved out when I was 18.
Okay.
And she moved to Virginia.
Okay.
And since then has happily been remarried. So excited. Like, great husband.
Oh, good. And you guys, so how long have they been married now?
They've been married a little bit over three years now.
And you like him?
Oh, he's great.
What does he do? What does your mom do?
They're both professors.
Now? Both professors. That's so nerdy.
I know. Aww. Again. Intelligence. I use intelligence. No, they, but yeah, like, just tumultuous, like, relationships. Like, I was a bad kid after, like, I came out of my shell.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I, like, would sneakily get drunk all the time, started smoking. Oh, my mom also has, like, been, like, 25 years sober. Like,
okay.
That's always,
you can always kind of, and we've talked about it before, too, but that there's kids of parents who have problems like that, addictions, or have had.
Hi, my entire family has a drinking problem.
There's such a weird.
That's not even true, though. They just like to party.
They
honestly do just love partying.
I think there's something, though, that comes with. I mean, at least I talk about it with my therapist enough. There's a defense that comes with being a kid of a parent like that. Like, learn how to take care of yourself.
Well, and
so
what
easily.
Was interesting, what you said, too, like. Being surprised by, like, ways that you didn't know you were feminist or being accidental feminist.
Yeah.
I retaliated against my mother for so long. Like, I don't think I honestly knew what feminism was. And all of a sudden when I was in college and, like, started getting these discussions where it was just like, dude, like, you just the most sexist conversations in art school.
Oh, God.
I mean, any school, you know that. Like,
yeah.
But, like, finding, like, you're sticking up for these things that you, like, you're really passionate about. And, like,
yeah.
You don't know why. And it's not just because you're a woman. It's just, like.
Because you're a human.
I'm a human. And, oh, I forgot. I grew up with a woman who wrote about feminism.
So you took it for granted, kind of, you think?
I don't think I took it as a valid thing. I don't think you take anything that your parents do seriously until a certain point in time. And so in my head, like, I had to figure it out on my own. And figure out why it was important to me.
So did you push back on it for a while? And
I don't think I ever actually pushed back on it. I think it was just, like, something that was just, like, I don't know anything about this, and I know it's important, but, like, I
don't. Because it's coming from her, I don't.
I'd rather go drink 5 o'clock in Red Faygo and smoke Parliament Lights with my friends.
God, you're so classy.
And try to go, like, screw around with boys and, like.
See, I was so.
Monte Carlos.
I was very asexual in high school. I did not drink. I didn't do anything until I got to college. And then I think I sort of. Like, dam burst a little.
That was, like, me when I was 17. Like, all of a sudden, yeah. I was like, I've been really good up until this point
later,
in time.
When it wasn't as cute.
I'm
you know what
go
I mean?
Crazy
it's not
now.
As, like, acceptable. I don't know.
I did it for, like, 10 years, so.
Good for you. You don't look like it's a day over 5.
Great.
I'm just kidding. You look like a beautiful mermaid.
Shout outs to all the pedophiles. I'm a 5-year-old. Come find me.
Excellent. Everyone that gets in this closet finds ways to tell people how to, like, come find them. Kaylee was like, I live in the woods alone with a dog. Just come.
Kaylee doesn't live in the woods.
I know.
Kaylee lives on a hill in
kind
an undisclosed
area.
Undisclosed area of LA that has a great view, and yes, there are some trees.
And yes, there are some woods. When did you decide, I guess? Because there's a moment I think that everybody has, right, where you're like, I'm artistically inclined. And then there's the moment that that switches to, oh, I'm going to do... We were kind of talking about before, right? Because I was saying that after recording yesterday, the switch flipped for me where it was like, the first couple episodes, I was like, I think I'm going to try to have a podcast. And then yesterday I sat down and I was like, oh, I'm a podcaster.
I have a podcast.
Like, oh, I have a podcast. Come and sit down and join me on my podcast. Like, this is actually, I enjoy it. I feel like I'm actually pretty decent at it. I'm enjoying the conversations. Like, let's do this. This is fun. When was the moment that you were like, oh, I'm not going to just try to be an artist. Like, oh, I'm an artist. And it's important for me to cultivate this somewhat professionally. When was that moment? When did you start taking art seriously?
I've always taken art seriously. Okay. I've always taken art seriously. I, like, my attraction to journalism initially was because same mentality of, like, practicality of a parent saying, like, yeah, but how are you going to be an artist? Like, how are you going to make a living out of being an artist?
Right. What's your backup?
Oh, wait, you can make a very good living out of graphic design. Mm-hmm. That's something that there's always a need in this... you always have to supply for. Everything around you has been designed. This mic, like, the logos, the type on it, like, somebody designed that.
Yeah.
Everything. So,
so you were just always aware of that.
I was always aware of it, and so I think as I got into, like, my more upper-level courses, mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, these are things that, like, I'm excited about. Like, remember the first time I took a publications class? And making my first, like, publication by hand and, like, hand-binding it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, publication's tight. Like, I want to do this. Yeah. I'd always loved magazines.
Yeah.
And so now it's interesting. Like, I moved to California and I get a gig at a magazine. Like.
Yeah. So you've been art directing for Malibu Magazine for the past, what?
Year.
Year.
Over a year.
That's crazy. It feels kind of that long, but then not that long at the same time. Because
time flies.
Well, I still remember having the conversation on your porch.
Yeah.
That one day. And then just being like, of course it's been a year.
Yeah.
Because of course, like, there was never a time when you were sort of feeling unsure about your job that I was thinking that you weren't going to get a job soon. So in that, I'm like, oh, of course it's been a year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it feels so impossible until it happens.
Time flies when you have no seasons.
Right, when everything is just warm and warm. Sunny and no rain. So you moved out here. You didn't really have a job. You kind of came Maverick style. You were sort of just ready to leave Michigan. What was the first paying thing that you did out here?
I had, like, freelance, like, gigs from Michigan still. Mm-hmm. The first one was with a salon, just needed a few things, and, like, that actually, like, segued into, like, some bigger jobs that I've been working on over the past year.
Oh, cool.
So, a lot of it, I feel like so much of it has been word of mouth for me.
Including this podcast. Word of this mouth.
Mouth.
The last time that we, like, really, really hung out, we went to get coffee, and you started talking about how you had potentially wanted to go back to school. Maybe
yeah.
For curation, actually, which is something that doesn't feel very far off from what you're doing now, but I think in discipline is actually really different. And so it's interesting because I think maybe for someone who isn't you, right, who isn't in your brain, there is this perception that you're going to go from sort of making to acquiring, to curating, to, but in the same way, I feel like curation is a making in and of itself, because it's then something that you are lending your creative voice to bring together as a whole.
So, well, how are you going, like, to tell the story visually? It's a different way of telling.
So do you feel like it's an extension of what you're already doing?
Yeah, I think it's a natural extension because, like, that's what you do in a magazine. It's like, how do I visually tell the story that needs to be told, like,
right,
throughout the entire magazine? Okay, how do I visually tell the story throughout the space?
Right.
Or this book, or, like, retrospect, like, whatever. Like,
whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah, how do you tell that story? And I think the thing is about, it's a natural transition for me because I've always been more intrigued by the story,
okay,
than the actual design. Like, I'm not somebody who creates for fun. And I think it's because I work a lot.
Yeah.
That, like, my idea of fun is not going home and, like, drawing for 5 hours.
Right.
I wish it was, but it's not.
Right.
I'm going to go get fucking blackout drunk.
Do you think it's because it's been the only thing that has been your career so far, really? It's because you do it with, like, because I think it would be, just for the sake of comparison.
I need a reason to create something. I can't just point blank.
Well, what if you were still working at a hair salon? Do you think that your reason to create something would be that it wasn't what you were doing professionally? That's the question. Do you think the reason it is not your hobby anymore is because you do it full-time,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Okay. So I don't view it, yeah. It's something that I've just always, I enjoy how you tell the story more so than, like, how you design and create it.
Right.
The designing isn't the fun part for me. Like, the thinking and the research and, like, the ideas behind it are the fun part for me.
Right.
And so, I don't know. I think, for me, it makes a lot of sense. I think exterior, like, people would be weird, like, oh, that's kind of a strange transition to try to go from publishing to, like...
I don't think it's strange. I don't, but I could see where people would say it's just an interesting jump.
Because it's just, like, in college art history courses, like, took a master's level contemporary painting art history course.
Oh, cool.
And everyone in that course were fine artists. Fine artist majors, master and bachelor level. Illustration had a
very hands-on, basically.
A classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
all classically trained. All
yeah.
Trained. Okay.
My background was graphics. Like, it was
very new school.
It was trade. I mean, people view graphic design as, like, it's a trade.
Right.
It's not an art.
That's gotta be hard.
Ah, no, I mean, art school freaking, the way art school cliques are broken up and just, it's very strange.
I've only been to one art school party ever, and it was when I was visiting, so Sydney, who has also been as a guest on the podcast, we were visiting her sister, Bronwyn, in San Francisco, and there's, like, the art school of San Francisco, or, like, the San Francisco, there's some fucking...
There's an art school in San Francisco. We don't know the name, but it's fine.
But wherever it is, it's, like, the best one. So shout-outs to whatever the best art school in San Francisco is. I was at a party with all of you guys, and it was so crazy because it's, like, intense rivalries. But not that I didn't think that they would exist, but it was, like, the same thing that I saw at Florida State with, like, football rivalries, but literally for just, like... Be like, your foundry is bullshit. And I'd be like, what the fuck? Where am I? Like,
it's really like this. It's like, you've got the painting majors looking down at the drawing majors, really, really looking down and scoffing at the illustrators. At the same time, also looking at, like, printmakers and being like, I see you. You're not, it's, you're, no.
Everyone
you're
just
below
hates
me.
Everyone.
And then below that, there's everyone just shitting on the graphic designers.
Oh, that sucks.
In the meantime, like, graphic designers are just picking fights with, like, the interior design floor, which is so funny because two of my best friends, like, one of the girls I live with, like
the most dramatic fucking fame situation. That
oh
you're
God,
playing.
It's like so funny. It is fame without the dancing,
without the sweat.
Oh God, no, I got pretty sweaty.
Just without Debbie Allen. So, you graduated art school relatively unscathed. You just
no, I graduated. Art school with flying colors. Graduated with 3.
I just meant in the fact that other people didn't bring you down with theirs.
No, I was the queen of art school.
You're the queen of two places, meanwhile, and art school?
Funny thing, I partied so hard and managed to graduate with 3.92.
Get the fuck out, good for you. Party. I had like a 3.2 and I partied moderately, but I worked a lot. So I feel like a lot of time my focus was never super in... my classes and stuff.
Can we just say how I've bumped like 5 things in the last 10 minutes?
But you haven't turned anything off, which is good. I'm just going to move this up here so that you don't actually...
Hi, I'm Klutzy.
Hi, I'm going to ruin this podcast. I'm just kidding. She's not going to do that.
Hi, I'm going to break everything.
So when you moved to LA... Oh my God, this little...
Hi, Mew Mew.
Bee-boo. We're going to have to edit you out.
But I don't want to edit it out.
She's so cute.
Bye.
No, we gotta go, Bubba. So, what do you... I feel like a lot of what I'm asking people, and I'm trying to ask it in, like, the least asshole way possible, because I feel like the older I get, the more it sounds like a dick question, but, like, do you have, like, an end goal? Do you have something that you kind of optimistically see in your future that you're working towards?
No. I'm just letting it go. I think I've always been like, the things that have landed in my lap have been serendipitous,
mm-hmm.
or things that I brought to fruition that I had a, that was missing that I needed to like create.
Right.
So that right then and there, I've just negated the fact that I said I don't create for fun. I do, just in a very different way, I think,
yeah.
than most artists or designers or whatever you want to term yourself as. But, yeah, I think I've kind of let everything serendipitously fall into my lap. So if, like, going to school is going to be something that I'm going to do, like, I'm going to have that aha moment that you were talking about, like,
yeah.
podcast of knowing, like, oh, I'm not faking this. Like, this is real. I'll yeah. have that aha moment that it's like, oh, yep, I am going to go back to school.
Right.
I do want to do this. Like, it yeah. is the time to do this. I'll have that moment.
Love school, man. It's the best. Oh,
I miss it so much. I'm such a, I don't feel any better than when I'm sitting down and researching and have.
Yeah, working on a paper. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's the greatest feeling ever. I miss yeah. it so, so much because I was like.
Organizing information.
But I was, like, a film studies minor, too.
Yeah.
So I just got to do fucking fun shit, you know? Just, like, writing papers about how, you know, like, Star Wars is just a giant samurai film. You know, those are, like, the greatest papers to fucking write. Like, I don't know. I just...
No, I was the same way. Like, trying to, like, write a 20-page paper and, like, point out how, like, Michael Borman's is, like, mirroring, like, Goya. Meanwhile, you have, like, a class full of people who are, like, what are you talking about right now? Like, this makes no sense how you're comparing these
you're
two
like,
things.
Wait till you read my paper.
And then your instructor's just like, this is an insight I've never thought about before. Again, different background. You bring something else to the table.
Right.
But, like, yeah, no, I miss school. Like, I think that's the only thing I can, like, really foresee.
Yeah.
I just started a retirement fund, so, like, I know that's
fuck,
there.
I don't have that going yet. I need to.
It's my birthday present for my mom.
That's nice. Yeah. Oh, that sounds good.
Everybody kept saying, like, she's going to buy you a car. She's going to buy you a trip to...
And you were like, no, I just...
Europe.
Need...
And I was like, no, it's going to be something so practical.
I want an IRA.
It's going to be so practical. All of you are going to laugh. And then I told them, and they were like, oh, my God. You're
but
so
that's
right.
That's kind of amazing, though, in a way. Like,
oh,
I almost
it's
want
great.
That because it's never something you would buy for yourself at this
no.
point, right? Because you're like, I'm going to fucking live forever, so...
Then she's been on my ass about it for, like... years. Like,
I need to do
what
that.
Are you
I just
doing?
Got renter's insurance, and I feel like that's the
oh,
biggest
oh, girl, I've been
stuff.
On I've been on that tip for a while.
I, like, just got it, and I'm like, I'm an adult now. Like,
yeah.
done and done. Do you see kids in the future? Do you see family? Do you see...
I see a partner, I think.
Yeah?
I can definitely see... I would like a companion. I don't know about kids.
I feel like our generation is so on the fence about kids a lot, and I think... I've just interviewed so many women. I actually haven't had...
Any men yet.
Well, I'm trying to think. I had Stephanie, and then I had Kaylee, and then Sydney, and then Jean, and then you. So
yeah.
No men yet. Yeah, it's all been ladies. And I realized it's, like, not intentional, but then I just also just surround myself with, like, badass fucking bitches. And Jean doesn't have kids. Like, Kaylee's been divorced, obviously. Like... You are around my age and don't have kids. I think there's something
just
about...
finally gotten to what might be a serious relationship.
Yeah, you're like, this is just happening for me. Like, I think it's interesting because...
I'm sorry, serious adult relationship.
Right.
That isn't based on...
I like that classification.
Drama being passion. Mistaking drama as passion.
I think it's interesting because it's not as much on our radars, right? Like, has it ever... Because it's... For me, like, it was never really...
It's been on my radar. So many people that, like, I went to high school with, like, a lot of my close girlfriends, they all have kids now.
But, like, for yourself, has it ever been on the radar? Because, like, for me personally, there's never been a time where I was like, oh, yeah, I could definitely see that happening in a certain timeline.
No, I've never thought that there's a timeline where that was going to happen.
Have you ever had any weird encounters with ladies because of it? I feel like sometimes that freaks women out. If you...
I'm just apparently get... I mean, obviously, I get told I'm a bitch all the time.
Same.
And super intimidating.
I don't get intimidating. I think I just
I get intimidating.
Like, aggressive. I'm very assertive is what I get. I'm very assertive.
See, I get intimidating.
Well, do you think it's the tattoos?
No, I think it's the personality.
Okay. You're like, no, I'm just intimidating to people.
Well, I mean, it's not being submissive again. It's being assertive.
Right.
And it's people using different verbiage to, like,
yeah.
describe the same kind of thing. But, like,
right.
I once got told by a friend that, like, I needed to, like, to truly have men hit on me, I needed to, like, be submissive at the bar and, like, not stare them in the eye. Are you still friends with that person? Yeah, but, like, she's wifed up now, so.
Go for her. Go for you, girl. That's clearly what you wanted because you weren't looking anybody in the eye.
Sorry, like, no, I'm not going to change my personality to find a man. It's not that important to me.
Well, that's, I think, the point that so many of us are getting to now is that we realize that we're, like, perfect the way that we are. Not perfect in the way that doesn't need self-reflection and analyzation and always working on yourself, but perfect in the way that we don't need another half to fulfill us. And that's,
well, it's to have a meaningful existence.
And that's a thing, that's a power in and of itself, I think, that maybe our previous generations didn't have. Because, you know, I talked to my grandma and, you know,
I just talked to my grandma too.
And, like, they just, it was a different time back then. You know, you got married a lot of, for a lot of utility, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, now I keep talking about it and I find that I'm never actually talking about, like, the logistics of planning of my wedding. I'm always just talking about what it means to get married. And I'm, like, looking at it now and I'm like, oh, it seems like a much bigger deal what we're doing, because it's not this, like, formulaic, systemic, like, oh, you just get married and because you have to, you know what I mean?
Well, I feel like we're finally actually, like, if marriages are going to happen at this day and age,
they're
going, like,
to be choices completely.
They're going to be choices, and you actually are marrying for the idea of love.
Yeah.
And love.
And which is terrifying, because as a concept, that's never what it was.
No, so, and now it's never, there's it a on. Great book. I think it's Stephanie Kuntz. It's Marriage, a History.
Okay.
And it's talking about, like, how until, like, the last, like, 70 years. It was a business transaction.
Yeah, it's a contract.
It was a contract to ensure your mobility moving forward in the world,
mm-hmm.
and, like, security.
To further your line.
To further, basically. Yeah, to, it was all utility.
Well, and then there's that whole, it's basically like De Beers. The De Beers Corporation had all of the monopoly basically on the diamonds, and then they put out Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend with Marilyn Monroe, right? And Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. So then you've got this theme song that turned into a commercial for diamonds that then became the benchmark for the entire wedding industry complex that dominates our culture so much that there are, like, 14 wedding shows all about the same shit right now. I clearly don't watch them because I've ran out of
I would like to, like, have, like, a reality show where I just go around from, like, high-end bridal boutique to another one just trying on dresses while being wasted. I think that's a great concept. I think that all the single ladies out there, shit, I think all ladies in general,
they would just enjoy. It just needs to be a recurring sketch on a show. Like on Jimmy Fallon or something. You would have to be the wedding Shout correspondent.
Out. I know somebody who's going on a date with one of the writers for Fallon.
Who knew writers had sex? I didn't.
We'll edit this part out. No, you don't have to. I want the world to hear the real me. Awkward. Slightly funny from time to time.
Awkward. Wears a lot of black. Got a lot of tattoos. Pretty funny.
I'm blonde. I promise I'm not a goth.
I think the last question I have is something that I've sort of been posing to people, and that is, like, so what I hope to do with the podcast, in a way, is give people who are real working artists something to listen to in their cars on the way to work.
That isn't formulaic.
Well, it's not even that. That's real people telling their stories of how they're sort of sustaining themselves. And I think that maybe there's a perception of the art world that is, it's an all or nothing thing. You have to either be A-list and, like, top of your game, or you have to be, like, starving. But there's a very big sort of scale of working in this industry.
And I think a good way of, I'm sorry, I just interrupted.
No, and let you interrupt. I was just going to say, yeah, what has it been for you that has been that hardest challenge to sustain working in this industry?
I think it's not allowing other people's benchmarks and when they hit the level of success that they want to hit, like watching people succeed, not letting that bum me out that I'm not at the same place at the same time.
Yeah, because that's hard.
That's the hardest part for me, is like judging myself against, like, what other people are doing. Like,
yeah, because you want to, because I think there's obviously the inherent, like, I'm happy for my friends when they find success.
But yeah, but you're also the, like, fuck you. Like, why can't that happen to me?
Right.
Like, how did you get that break?
Right.
What am I doing wrong? There are moments when you wake up in the morning and you're just like, oh, fuck, I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah. No, that happens to me a lot.
Like, I need to get my shit together and be an adult.
What do you think was the biggest I'm a piece of shit moment you felt?
I think, obviously, like, moving somewhere without having a secure job in line. Like, you're going to wake up multiple mornings having panic attacks and being like, what the fuck have I done to myself? Like,
right.
I'm screwed. But, like, also, like, you're a human and you have a head on your shoulders. And I think anybody in that situation, like, you learn how to survive. You figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, figure it out. You are an adult.
Yeah.
This is what you are here to do, is figure it out and get to the next point.
You sound like Shia LaBeouf right now.
Just do it.
Just
make
do
it. Your dreams come true.
That video came out, and I was just like, God, this is my life. He's
his Padawan
tail.
That
video is just my spirit animal. Yeah, his little Padawan tail. What a freak. Whatever. In Florida, we call those rat tails.
True. I think I'm just trying to do, like,
Star
Wars reference. I'm
just trying to make him feel less gross. Like, when you feel those moments, when you've sort of felt those moments of comparison, how are you able to push through to get to a place where you are sort of enjoying what you're doing now? You kind of are ready for a new challenge, but, like, how have you gotten past it to be able to just survive in LA?
I think it's surrounding myself with people who are really supportive and hardworking and, like, genuinely want the best for me and, like, are competitive but don't see, like, women as competition. Like, I like you said, surrounding yourself by a bunch of badass bitches and badass gentlemen who are, like, supportive as well. But it's, like, it's saying that, like, I've kind of, like, weeded out and, like, kind of cut back on the relationships that, like, aren't benefiting me in moving forward.
Right.
Like, not cutting them out, but, you know, just, like, figuring out, like, how to go back, how this network works and how these relationships work.
Right. How do these pieces of work intertwine?
How do we work best together? What are situations that we should not be involved in together?
Right.
It's having that, and it's honestly listening to what people have to say. And when somebody says, I'm proud of you, you've done a great job in what you're doing so far. Like, you work so hard and are X, Y, and Z doing this thing that impresses me. Actually listening to it instead of, like, just, like, brushing it off and just being like, oh, I'm too humble to accept that. Like, no. Like
take it to heart.
Instead of
if you're going to take the criticism to heart, too.
Like, it's having the mentality that it's never good enough. I think that you should always have that. Nothing you do is ever going to be good enough. So you got to keep striving to make it better.
Right.
But, like, also,
that's very Japanese, that philosophy.
It's, but also having it in mind that, like, you are human and, like, you're also neurotic. We're all neurotic to a level.
Yeah.
And, like, not letting that perfection get in the way of, like, living and actually, like, letting things come out of situations that are imperfect and, like,
right.
What can be made out of that? What does that look like? It's always striving to be better and do the best that you can, but, like, also, like, sitting back and, like, really listening to what people have to say and knowing that, like, I need to be gentle with myself.
Right.
Like, I've got to, like, nurture myself in order to, like, create something that I'm really proud
of.
That's,
like, the hardest thing to do, I think.
That's the hardest thing.
Nurturing yourself.
And, I mean, it's also hard, like, remembering that, like, I mean, how you said, like, the art world, it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, like.
That's kind of what it feels like, anyway.
It feels that way, and it also feels like you apply that to, like, I think the easiest way to look at it these days are literally Instagram. It is your art gallery.
Yeah.
However. The curation of your life. I mean, so many people know I have an issue with the word curation as it applies to,
right.
Like, your curated SoCality Barbie bullshit. And mind you, like, I post a lot of photos of landscapes and people looking off into the distance. I know what that is. I know what it looks like.
Yeah.
I'm a culprit of it, too. But, like, not having it be something, like, instead of, like, hashtagging live authentic, go fucking live your life and do something.
Yeah, just go be.
And realize that, like, those benchmarkers that people are putting on there and, like, saying, I got X, Y, and Z done, and, like, oh my God, look at me for what I've accomplished. Like, yeah, they probably worked their ass off for that. And they also, like, might be lying about it slightly. Like, who knows what the truth of the matter is?
I think a lot of the problem that I have sometimes is that, there's the train that you get on in life, right? Lots of trains that you can decide to hop on. And once you're on it, it's like you're either on it or you have to fucking jump off and barrel roll down.
I feel like you've been jumping off and barrel rolling my entire life.
See, I get on the train of work.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah,
it's
totally.
But it's in that I have learned that I take a lot of my validation in not necessarily like the praises of other people, because it's not really that, but it's knowing that like my work ethic is first. So like if I'm a shittier person, it doesn't matter because I work really hard.
Yeah.
Not that it doesn't matter, but that's the mentality, right? Is that as long as I work really hard and that's like the main thing people know about me, then these other weird things about my personality I feel like can kind of slip, or I don't need to cultivate, or I don't need to examine, because as long as I'm like go, work, then no one can really say anything.
Yeah.
And that's such a weird fucking mentality to have, though, because it's like autopilot.
I think, and that's the thing, though, is like my entire life it's been like I've never had the point A to point B.
Yeah.
Thought in my mind, like I did when it was like, oh, I'm starting college, I need to get to graduating college, right. I need to find a job. And then you get to finding a job and you realize, oh, this train's gonna be riding, we don't know where point end is,
like, right,
it's where going, it's just a track. that is the train that I'm on. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I'm gonna jump on and off it a million times, but that's my track. I've always viewed that like everything is working towards work,
yeah,
and your career goal and like where it's going to take you next.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm finally getting to the point where it's like I'm allowing myself to like not have work be the primary thing for the first time in my life. Like,
I'm just starting to crack that code.
I'm starting.
Oh my god, it's so hard for me because I can't. It's too easy to just seek refuge in the calm of making things.
Yeah, and sometimes you need to get out and like experience things.
I know.
Like sometimes going out and spending $600 at RAI for a 3-day backpacking trip. Like, mind you, I'm going to use that stuff forever, so it's well invested, but like...
No, I know what you mean.
It's knowing that, like, these trips are important for a reason, that you come back feeling refreshed and motivated, or it sheds light on something that you weren't sure of before.
It's just fucking good to also just get out of your own head and get out of the city and...
Yeah.
And the people and the crowds and just... to feel like a person, because I think it's very easy in LA to feel like a cog, to feel like a part of the machine.
Oh, yeah.
Of what you're doing, because everyone, I think, in a way, is trying to just survive in a way that makes sense to them.
Yeah.
But there are so many cogs. There are so many needs for cogs. So it's just, it's an interesting thing.
We are the personalities to be cogs.
But honestly, I'm just fucking starting to crack the code of like being a person.
Oh yeah,
and it's something that's really I'm like
we are plebeian children.
But it's like not even that. It's like I have been a work bot.
Yeah,
like I have taken so much validation, identity, just fucking sense of worth in creating, in work, in pushing myself, in There's something to be said for always being the person that someone can count on, right? Mm-hmm. But then you get very used to a moniker. You get very used to a thing that people know you as, though. But it's not a comfort. It's not a malaise that I'm happy to be in. And so
no,
it's interesting because I feel
mothering
uncomfortable
people,
now.
Yeah, like, same thing, like, mothering friendships. Like,
yeah.
Taking on that mothership role. And, like, people have mothered me, too, but, like... You know, there are those times when, like, you don't want to be the therapist anymore.
Yeah.
To everyone else's problems around you.
Yeah.
You want somebody to be the therapist for you, or, like,
but
you
also realizing that, for me, it was realizing that I was taking too much stock in that identity.
Yeah.
It was something that it was easy to have on the forefront, because then I just didn't have to cultivate other things.
Yeah, and that's then you had an excuse that you didn't have to cultivate anything else, because...
Oh, because
this is my only priority.
Exactly. And that's the point that I just... And so now it feels like with other things that I'm doing, and even with, like, a little bit of planning the wedding, but also just trying to live life, I'm, like, slowly taking it one day at a time of, like, that doesn't need to be my main focus every day for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I am slightly missing out on living. And so that's what I'm... it's I'm having to take that step back and just refocus. And
I'm learning how to be in a relationship right now, and it's the scariest thing ever. Oh my god,
it's amazing.
It's amazing, but it's also just like, oh my god, like, this person genuinely wants to be around me.
And that's crazy.
Why is it crazy that they want to be around me this much?
It feels crazy, right?
It feels crazy. Like, why do you want to be around me this much? And why do I want you to be around all the time?
Do you ever have the feeling, because I am so weird sometimes, that I would be like, what is wrong with him that he wants to be around me all the time? Like, never a lot. And it was always when I was younger. No, I'm always just like,
what am I doing right?
I always just feel like such a Muppet in my life, so I just feel like
I am a Muppet in my own life.
I don't know. I'm so excited for you. I mean, I know that it's all very new and shrouded in mystery, but, like, it's something that I'm just, as your friend, I'm happy to see you in a different stage of your life, because it feels like it's really calmed you a bit. And not that you were frantic or frenetic before, but you seem very at peace with something that is scary and big, and it seems like you're aware of the scariness and the bigness of it.
Yeah.
But, like, there's a calmness about you that you seem surprised about.
And I'm so surprised I'm this calm.
I'm so surprised
I haven't bolted yet.
Because I can see it in your eyes. You have, like a wild wisp behind your eyes, but it literally is because you're like, no, I'm chill. I just don't know what to do with it. Like, that's what it looks like.
Hey, I don't know what's going on, and I'm permanently just drunk from cuteness right now, so, like,
not alcohol. Just cuteness.
And there's been a lot of alcohol.
Some
too.
Alcohol. Mostly cuteness.
I drank a lot of wine. I had an allergic reaction to drinking the other night.
Yeah, you said that. That's crazy.
Thanks,
and I love
Claritin.
That you took, like, Claritin with alcohol.
Dude, I had to get rid of the hives on my hand. My hands were so itchy.
I just, like, I've mostly been sober for the past couple years.
Oh, yeah.
Or past couple months, like, almost a year now because of all the shit. So now it's like I get drunk off, like, a glass of wine.
You get drunk off of sniffing it, probably.
I don't really, it's weird. I have weird reactions to it now. Like, the only time I can really drink is, like, if I'm eating and I have water.
You have something to
like,
soak
I
it up.
I have something to soak it up. I can't just drink to drink anymore. It's very bizarre. Well, thank you for coming to the closet.
Hey, dude, I'm really sad to step out of the closet.
I mean, I'm a little warm right now, but...
Oh, yeah. I would love to, like, go jump in that pool outside right now.
You should just do it. I didn't bring my bathing suit, which I should have done.
I didn't either. I gotta go on a date after this. Fuck me.
He will. So, where can people find you on the internet if they want to find you?
Well, go on and find me at the old bitch cannon. BITCHANAN. Oh, CANAN. I don't know how to spell... I'm drunk.
BANANAN.
Find me at Banana.
No, it's at Bitch Cannon on Instagram, right?
On Instagram.
And then FairfaxBuchananBanks.com?
Yep.
And then aren't you on Tumblr, too?
I am, but it's connected to the website. It's not that important.
So are you, because I just want to have an availability for everyone to pimp themselves out at the end of every podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Are you available for work? Can people contact you if they need graphic design work?
Contact me. If I'm not the person to do the job, I know a bunch of people who I can direct you to.
But in terms of your talents, what can people contact you if they're in a need of?
Depends on the project.
Graphic design, art direction.
I don't know, branding help, brand messaging. You need help with your brand. You need to brand yourself. I'm your girl.
You do, and you work with a lot of photographers. You work with a lot. You do website, a lot of stuff. Website design.
More just like content management kind of stuff. Like,
okay, cool.
Helping figure that out. I don't know. I like to view myself as kind of being a project manager of sorts.
You were the art director on Party Foul, which was fantastic.
I was
a short film.
I turned a frat house into a parents' house that got trashed by a party.
It was actually really kind of cool, and it was so funny. Oh my god, we were screening it the other day at work for a second just to QC the mix, and the shower curtain in the film we have in our shower, and then Steven was wearing the striped shirt that Kyle wears.
Perfect.
Like, he was just like wearing it that day.
Perfect.
And I was like, you know an indie filmmaker when you have to fucking repurpose your like set dressing as your actual house.
Oh, I'm
stuff.
Sorry when me, you, and Kaylee all
went to IKEA
and also ransacked our own departments to like.
That's what you got to do, though.
Yeah, it worked.
It totally did. There's a lot of Grand Rapids, Michigan stuff in that.
Oh
house.
Yeah, there is. Good thing that we're not saying specifically where it was. It
I
could
know.
Be anywhere.
It could be anywhere. It was a very. It looked like a very warm day for Michigan, though. If it was in Michigan.
Oh yeah, I think in my heart it is in Michigan.
Probably, because where we've all spent a lot of time.
Yeah, everyone involved with that.
So are you doing anything right now that people want to follow along with? Anything you want to specifically promote? Any projects on the horizon that you're...
There's a few that are coming up, but they're still a little bit under wraps because we're tightening out some details.
Still brewing.
Yeah, have me back for part two.
Excellent.
And I'll pimp myself out then.
Okay, that sounds good.
There's some stuff coming up that will be great.
Cool.
Yeah. So we'll just, I'm taking it as it comes and getting it ready. Getting it ready to launch it out for the public.
That's exciting. I don't even know what, I genuinely don't know what it is. So I'm trying to get a read from you, but you're not really giving it away with your face. She is keeping it tight, you guys.
I'm a stone cold bitch.
Keeping it tight. She's not telling me. And also her body. Keeping it tight. She's hot is what I'm saying. So everyone,
I'm blushing.
Check her out at BitchCannon on Instagram and FairfaxBuchananBanks.com. Thanks so much for coming, man. Hey, this was so great.
Thanks for having
me. I'm only mildly sweating anymore.
That's okay. I'm very profusely sweating, but I'm happy to be sweaty.
Do you think that I need a sign off? Do you think that I should have a sign off thing that I say at the end of every episode? I feel like I should, but I'm awkward, so nothing feels natural.
I think you'll figure it out.
I kind of just want to be like, all right, go fuck yourselves.
I was going to say, later, dickholes.
I'm just like, hey, see you later, shitheads. I got nothing. Everything's profanity.
Peace out, douchebags.
Everything sounds like I don't like people. I really like all of you that are listening, so it's
hey,
just...
you fuckers, I want to fuck every single one of you. That's how much I love you.
That's actually going to be weird, because what if anybody's parents listen to this? Just kidding. Everyone, I'm asexual towards you all. That's it.
I want to sex your dad.
All right, bye.
Goodbye.